So welcome to the BioFit Blueprint Bootcamp Nutrigenomics module on lipids and cardiovascular system. This is a super important one for you to be aware of and to study and to really know how to look for risk factors for, because it's so deadly and it's the number one killer in the US and throughout the world. So let's get started. Before we get too far in, make sure that you realize that this is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's education. It's just purely education. And if you or the clients you're working with are under the care of a doctor on medication, just make sure that they check in before making major changes to their diet and their lifestyle. So as a review, these are the cardiovascular markers, the blood markers that we presented in the module on functional blood chemistry. So make sure you're familiar with these. And there's more. So there's advanced ones in there as well. So you understand the risk factors are involved. You understand the present risk factors. And it goes both ways. When you see elevations or abnormalities in some of these blood chem markers, you're going to want to look at the genes. You're also going to want to look back, of course, at the history. But also, if you see the genes, you're going to want to look back to see how are these things expressing? Are these things expressing by looking at the blood chem and also at their symptoms? So what are some of these cardiovascular symptoms, or what other things in their history might allude you or point you to the fact that they may have some cardiovascular issues? Well, the obvious, you know, angina. They have chest pain on exertion, chest pain for no apparent reason. They may have high blood pressure. They may have headaches that are a result of that high blood pressure. They may have circulation issues and tinglings in fingers and toes, or discoloration, or very cold hands and feet as a result of being out in the cold. So you've got to really relate these history back to their blood chem markers and also to the SNPs. So we're going to start by looking at the five, I think, most important ones to be looking at. There are others, and other people may disagree that those are the most important, but those are the ones that I like to look at because they pose the highest risk. And then we'll look at some others, this accessory one. So if you're looking and saying, you know, this person has all this stuff going on in their blood and they have all this crazy stuff in their history and they're actually not eating too badly and they don't have such a high stress, you want to make sure that you haven't missed anything. And so there's a bunch of extra ones that you can look at. So the first one we're going to look at is probably the most common one, is the ApoE4. And you might have already heard that ApoE4 is a problem. So ApoE is the genetic marker, and there's variations that it can be. It's actually two genes, and we'll show you what that really means, that you're looking at, and the combination of those two genes is what gives us our designation. So what we look at, it's on chromosome 19. We have anywhere from a 2-2 to a 4-4. 2-2 is the most protective, 3-3 is the most common, and 4-4 is the most dangerous. Anywhere that there's a 4, whether it's a 2-4 or a 3-4, which is very rare to see 2-4, but that's a combination of some protection and some risk. 3-4 is a little bit more dangerous, and 4-4 is definitely the one that poses the highest risk, like 10 times increased risk of cardiovascular accident. So we're looking at this, and the way that these numbers come about, there's actually two different RSIDs that we're looking at to determine their status, whether they're a 2-2, a 4-4, 3-4, whatever. So for an ApoE2, they have a T allele at both RS4293358 and RS7412. So ApoE2, they have a T at both of these. ApoE3, they have a T at RS4293358 and a C at 7412. And then 4 means they have a C at both RS4293358 and RS7412. But remember, you calculate one of these, you calculate the other of these, and it's based on, you get one from mama and one from papa, one of each of these. So there's a bunch of different combinations, which then results in what I just showed you, right? There's 6 different combinations of what you could get. It's a little confusing, but most of the tests will, most of the genetic interpretation tests will actually tell you whether you're 2-2-3, 2-2, 4-4, et cetera. Okay, so that's that. So what do we do if we have an ApoE4? What does it really mean? It means that We have a hard time breaking down fat. What are the risk factors? Alzheimer's and heart disease, right? So with a 4, we're at a high risk of Alzheimer's and heart disease because we don't process the saturated fats, because this lipoprotein gets stuck into the cell wall and then drastically increases the risk of having a plaque buildup. So what do? We teach people to dramatically reduce or eliminate saturated animal fats. Got to be careful with saturated plant fats as well. With a 4-4, I have people reduce dramatically the intake of coconut or coconut oil mostly, but coconut as well. With a 4-3, not as much. With a 2-2, not much at all. But we want to cut back on that. We want to eat a heart healthy diet, whatever the heck that is in vogue these days. But, you know, a heart healthy diet is a diet rich in antioxidant rich fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, and whole grains to the tolerance of blood sugar. And you have to look at the blood sugar steps as well. You want to protect the brain with a low glycemic diet and phospholipids. Phospholipids are super important here. If I see an ApoE4 and I don't already have it, I'll run an advanced lipid test and advanced blood sugar testing so I can see what they're actually manifesting and how high their risk is. I get them to do a glucose meter, ideally a CGM if they can get one prescribed for them or they're willing to pay the extra money to go through something like Theia Health or Levels or whatever. You got to address their toxins and liver support, and you got to look at gut health. All of these things are critical if somebody has an ApoE4, because this person's at a high risk of heart disease. This person's at a high risk of Alzheimer's. Both are bad to get, and they will love you for protecting them. Let's take a look at another one, which is the ApoB. ApoB is a surrounding around the lipoproteins. So we have LPA, and we have the B around it. We have LDL, VLDL, chylomicrons, remnants, and chylomicrons. You can see from these how much triglyceride they have, and the chylomicrons have a lot of triglyceride. And the lipoprotein A doesn't have as much, but it's got a lot of fat in there. All right, so that's just overview of the chemistry of it. You're welcome to review and research on that. When a person has the ApoB variants, it means they're going to have higher LDLs. So there's two variants, the RS, two main variants, two RS693 and RS6752026. The AA, increased ApoB, higher LDL, higher triglycerides, and increased risk of heart disease. The AG is increased ApoB, higher LDL, higher triglycerides, and increased risk of heart disease. So anytime they have the A, they're at increased risk. And GG is typical. Here I want to just say something. Typical risk of heart disease is very, very high when you look at our society. So just because they're a GG doesn't mean they're safe. You really have to look at their labs. You really have to look at their lifestyle. And then there's the 6752026. The typical is G, so that the risk allele is A. So they'll have lower LDL cholesterol if they have this. And the typical is actually higher. So really, an ApoB variant of RS6752026 can end up being protective. So this is something you got to be able to tell people, that not all of these SNPs are putting them at risk. And then we have some rare ApoB variants that are related to familial hypercholesterolemia. So the 1444678 73. So again, the AA is risk of familial hypercholesterolemia. It means it doesn't seem to be as affected by diet and lifestyle. You can't seem to get it down as quickly and easily. So we really have to work on healthy diet and lifestyle anyway, and all the factors you can control. An AG is a carrier for familial hypercholesterolemia, meaning probably this person isn't displaying it. And hypercholesterolemia, familial, is usually the cholesterol is way, way high, like higher than you would expect. It's not like just 205 or 230 or 250. It's like 450 or higher. And GG is typical. And again, typical risk for heart disease is not so good. So this is stuff we have to look at. Let's take a look at LPA. You've probably heard a lot about LPA, lipoprotein little a. And it's a really tricky one, because unlike most of them, almost 90% of the elevations you're going to see are genetically controlled. Yes, we can help it with diet and lifestyle, but not as much as some of the other factors. So here's four of the RSIDs. The RS3798220C is the risk allele, risk of elevated LPA, and increased risk of heart disease. It's an independent risk factor for that. Doesn't mean that if you see an LPA that the person's screwed, but they probably have a serious family history. I personally have a couple of heterozygous LPA variants, and a lot of people in my family have died of heart attacks. So I'm super careful about everything that I do. This other RSID 10455873 has a G risk allele. Again, increased risk of elevated LPA. But some of these others have a decreased LPA. So the quote unquote risk factor, which isn't really a risk factor, for RS6919346 is T. So if somebody has a T on this, these two, and also the RS4127214, that T allele, that T is going to protect them. So end up with decreased LPA. So these are things that you can give people good news as well as the bad news, right? People like that, they're encouraged, and then you can talk to them about what they can do about this. So LPA levels in the blood are estimated to be 90% hereditary. Super high when it comes to this, because most things don't have that high of a correlation. There's an article if you want to read more. So another thing we want to look at is how estrogen levels can affect LPA, because a lot of the things that are related to estrogen are easily managed and controlled. So if we can do things to keep our estrogens in safe levels, then we can help to decrease the LPA. So higher estrogen levels are associated with lower concentrations of LPA. So in postmenopausal women, when the estrogen levels start to decline, the LPA levels can increase. So if you have a postmenopausal woman and her LPA levels are high, it could be related to the estrogen. And there's things that you can do to help support her with the estrogen, but you got to be careful. And that's a subject for another presentation. So why am I looking at phase one liver detoxification? Because it's related to caffeine, and these caffeine related and some of the toxin related are actually related to estrogen metabolism. So this is one way that you can help people to have more of the protective estrogens, and we'll look at those in a moment, than the dangerous metabolites. And so the CYP1A2 related to caffeine metabolism. So if we can help people to get off of the coffee or significantly reduce it, they're going to be less at risk for elevations in the 4-hydroxyestrone, which predisposes to uterine and also breast cancers, cancers that are hormone sensitive. The CYP1A2 is found in a cluster with CYP1A1 and CYP1B1, and those are related to estrogen. They also are related to detoxifying environmental toxins like heterocyclic amines and aflatoxins, et cetera. So 34% of these people are slow metabolizers of caffeine. Caffeine affects estrogen clearance, fibroids, tender breast cancer, and it affects the risk of heart disease, which is why we're including it here. So these are things that you can help people. They're modifiable risk factors. And there's just a little bit about the 4-hydroxyestrone and cardiovascular risk. It increases oxidative stress. It increases inflammation. It impacts vascular health, especially the endothelial dysfunction and stiffness of those arteries. And it can accelerate the accumulation of fatty deposits in the walls. So I like doing the Dutch test. The Dutch test is a really good test to see what the balance is between the various estrogens. So what do we do to help people with LPA? Well, you just said it was all genetic. Well, it's 90% genetic, but there are things that have been shown to lower it, and you have to modify the risk factors around it. You have to get the particle sizes and the LDLs and the VLDLs all in and under control. Niacin has been used for decades to lower the risk of heart disease. Studies show that 1 to 3 grams a day reduce LPA by an average of 30 to 40%. The biggest problem with niacin, there's two, but the biggest one is compliance. 1 to 3 grams of niacin a day will cause extreme extreme flushing from the vasodilation, and people don't like it. So when you're going to bring people into that range, and of course, the size depends on their levels of risk and their age and their size, like how much do they need? A 250-pound bodybuilder needs a lot more than someone who's a petite 5'4", 120-pound woman. So studies show 1 to 3 grams a day. How do you get somebody to take that if some people take 50 milligrams and they're flushing for hours? Well, it's slow and slow. I use a powdered mixture and I start really, really low with like a little pinch that's like 30 micrograms, and you build it up. Right? 1 to 3 grams is 1,000 to 3,000. So if they are having trouble with 50, then you're starting slow. I always recommend the powder, and we go slow and slow and slow and increase it up. But the problem is if somebody misses a few days, they get set back. So there's a whole process for doing this. And we describe it in our NEPT module on advanced lipid panels. I may talk about it a little bit in the blood chemistry, but we really just need to go low and slow. There's a couple of really good books about niacin that you can read and learn how to titrate it. You got to be careful because of compliance. The other issue is too much niacin can do two things. One thing is methylation. It can decrease methyl donors, and it also can affect blood sugar if it's too high. So be careful, watch it low and slow. Now, the other studies have shown that ginkgo, and this is all on that Genetic Life Hacks link on the bottom of that page. They have a lot of good information. That's a great article. That reducing LPA with 120 milligrams twice a day of ginkgo, 23% decrease. That's significant. And then berberine has been shown to not only decrease LPA, but cholesterol levels, but I wasn't able to see exactly the percentage as well as the dosing on vitamin C and carnitine. But these are things to consider for folks with the LPA, because you want to protect these people because they're at increased risk. Another SNP is called CETP, and it affects the levels of LDLs versus HDLs. So let's take a more close look at that. It encodes an enzyme called cholesterol ester transfer protein. This keeps the HDL and LDL cholesterol in balance by transferring this cholesterol ester from HDL to other lipoproteins, and it removes cholesterol from the tissues and returns it to the liver so it can be eliminated in the bile. Variants may cause hyperapolipoproteinemia-1. And it actually leads to unusually high HDLs, which is kind of interesting. Variants of CETP have been linked to abnormal blood lipid levels, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and diabetic kidney disease. So these are some of the variants. The RS-1800-777, the typical is GG. And the AA, anything with an A, increases sepsis risk and lowers HDL. So lowering HDL is not a good thing. Sepsis risk is not a good thing. The RS-5882, AA is lower HDL, but GG is higher HDL. And the AG is somewhat higher. So there's a difference there. So majority of studies show that the G allele of the 5882 correlates with higher HDL, but not all studies show this. So the differences might be related to gender and ancestry, and of course, you know, the genetic factors and things around it. So we can't just assume that they're at, you know, a good status. And also, it's possible that it causes too high an HDL. Too high an HDL can be an inflammatory marker. Here's a few more. There's the RS-708-272-TAQ1B. The G is the normal, and the A is the risk allele. So if you have two A's, it's a higher cholesterol level and lowered risk of heart attack. If it's a G and an A, it's a slightly higher HDL and lower risk of heart attack. The RS-7376-4261 is, again, the C is the normal, the wild type is what they call it. The A is the risk allele. So they both increase, AA or AC increases the levels of HDL. So let's shift in and talk about this other. It's a little different than the typical. It's the 9P21. It's actually an area on the gene. And causes increased risk of, this is aortic aneurysm bursting, right? Increased risk of heart disease, obviously. And there's a link that you can read more about it. It's quite interesting. So this next one we're going to look at briefly is the 9P21. And I include this one because it increases the risk of aortic aneurysm, bursting of the blood vessels, right? And this isn't like a SNP with RSIDs and particular alleles and all. This is just a location on the gene. And it basically increases your risk. We have to look at this. If you just look at the 9P21, it's going to give you an indicator when you look at the lab, the reports. And I'll show you a report where it shows it in a bit. Mentioned earlier that I have an LPA. I also have a 9P21. And I have a family history of heart disease. I have a family history of people just dying suddenly of heart disease. So I'm at risk, right? So that's why I need to really, really control my environment, really control the modifiable risk factors. So you're going to be looking at this combination of genes. Fortunately, my ApoE is a 2-3, so I'm not really at risk there. And my CETP was a little, I think I have a heterozygous there. So there's risk factors here, right? That's what you're going to be assessing when you look at people and help them to see what's going on and how they need to be doing things to modify their risk. So let's just give you some lists. If you want to look any of these up, you can. But I'm going to show you when I look at the reports here, how I actually look at this. I don't look at it and like, oh, I have this gene and this gene and this gene. I look at the cluster of genes and the combination to assess people's risk. So these are some others. MTHFR and MTR are related because their effect on methylation. CBS has to do with bringing the homocysteine down. Same thing with MTHFR and RR. The homocysteine is a risk factor for cardiovascular. And so if we have SNPs in these areas, we're going to have some issues potentially. We have NOS, which is a blood pressure related gene, nitric oxide synthase. Nitric oxide is really important to have good blood flow and vasodilation. There's PON1 and PON2, which increases susceptibility of exposure to pesticides and that creating a problem. The CoQ10A, CoQ10B, and NDUF57, those are related to mitochondrial function. And the heart relies on good mitochondrial function in order to be healthy. We can't have a heart that can't get energy to pump and do all its jobs. So we are looking at those. The IGFR1R is related to insulin resistance. And then the others are related to various things like adrenal function, et cetera. So these are other things that might be related. And it's worth looking if you're trying to figure something out with people. But that initial session that you're doing, you know, don't need to look at it. This is for more advanced other cardiovascular. So this is where I describe them, right? The PON1 and PON2. So all of these are described there. Some more, the TCF7L2 related to type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. ACE is related to blood pressure, et cetera, et cetera. PCKS. Increased LDL, these are all possibly related. And you're looking here at the right side, the report from Genetic Life Hacks, which gives you some really good explanations. And I'm going to show you the report shortly. SNPs related to that severe hypercholesterolemia that I was talking to you about before. Here's some SNPs related to familial hypobeta lipoproteinemia. And, you know, some of these are overlapping, right? You're seeing these on multiple sheets. Fat metabolism related. We talked about ApoE, 3-4 or 4-4 is sensitive to saturated fats, especially animal saturated fats. The ApoA2, the C or T SNP regulates after meal response to saturated fat. Do you feel satiated? Do you feel more? Does it bother you? Do you get nauseous? Do you have a bilious response? The PPAR-G is related to diabetes and the adipoQ, adipose-specific gene. So all of these are related to how well your person is metabolizing or potentially metabolizing fat. So these are good things to do when you're trying to show people that they need to change their diet to be healthier. So this is the cardiovascular from the main genetic detoxification, the original genetic detoxification. And you can see they broke it out into blood clotting genes, blood pressure genes, and triglyceride and cholesterol. So I look at, like I said, patterns. I'm looking at this pattern and saying, person has some risk, that ApoE is problematic. All of these are described in the genetic book that Christy Sutton wrote. So you basically can look at these and get a sense of it. And then if you want to go deeper with each of these, then you can look. Blood clotting genes, if there's reds up in the blood clotting or even a lot of yellow, you're going to want to be talking to this person about reducing their risk of blood clotting, of talking about omega-3s and other things that help, natokinase and various enzymes to help break down clots and prevent the clot formation. So that's what that looks like. This was a later section that was added on the more recent test. I think this test came out in 2021. And if you look at this, it gives you even more of those genes. So here you're looking at the LPA. We're looking at the 4Q21s, and we're looking at some others. And so you have one page where she shows you in the report what the SNPs are. And this doesn't look so good, right? This looks like somebody at high risk, even though it's the same person in here. So these more advanced genes that she started adding give you a better look at it. When you look at this, you want to have some description. It says Appendix A. It's got a separate section on the test now because this didn't make it into the book. These are, you know, anybody who does research on particular topics is constantly researching. We get edition one, edition two, edition three. So she hasn't put out edition two in the book yet, but this Appendix A is included here in the report. And it gives you a description of what all of these things mean. So, you know, you have somebody with high risk, you're going to learn about these. If not, you know, you don't learn all of these up front and then go out and do it. No, you learn the most important ones. And then you look at a bunch of tests and then you study. You go back to this study. If you want to go deeper, you go into other places. And it's just the way learning happens in our functional medicine, functional nutrition field. These are some charts that I created from the original reports in the genetic detoxification. So I just kind of described them in general. So you don't have to go looking in the book. You actually have some nice sheets, and I recommend that you print these out and have them handy, have them in a binder so that when you're looking at things, you can really help people if you find this useful, and it tells you, you know, what kind of other things you should be looking at, what lab testing you should be doing, et cetera. So you've got three pages that correspond to the three sections of the genetic detoxification report I just showed you. So let's take a look at the genetic life hacks report. And I just want to show you the way you can use it to help you to get better information about a person. And then we're going to look at the self-decode. So let's take a quick look at this genetic life hacks report. This is specifically the heart. It's quite a few pages. It's really detailed. This is not something you really want to show somebody unless it's after you've signed them up for an in-depth program and they're really into it and geeky about it and want to know, and you're sitting down and doing like a complete comprehensive, you know, 5-hour genetic summary. Not a good thing to do in general on your first time with them. So what I look at here is each of these sections show you a gene and they tell you a little bit about it, but then you can click on the article to see more. And I've shown you these before in other modules within here in BioFit. So this is a good one to be looking at. So aldosterone, blood pressure, article on fibrinogen. There's one on factor five, that's a Leiden factor. It has to do with clotting. See all the ones related to coronary artery disease. So this is a really nice report, but you know, you're not, like I said, it's too complicated to show somebody and it can freak people out. Some people just want the bottom line and you're going to be able to bottom line it, but you want to go in deeper. You can do that and you can learn about more of these, especially if they have genetic risks that you heard about from their history. So it goes on and on and on. Some of these are really rare diseases too that you're not going to really see. Okay, so that's that. So the last thing I want to show you, and you'll have a PDF copy of this on the site, is this report from Self-Decode. So if you are looking to go deeper and you're really concerned about this person's heart, or you want to incorporate deeper look into your signature program, I recommend you look at the Self-Decode reports. And we're trying to include them wherever possible in the various modules. It just depends on whether they're available. So this is heart and blood vessels, gives you some information, gives you some key takeaways, gives it for this particular test report that I put in. the likelihood of this particular area palpitations and gives you the SNPs. So you're able to look them up. If you upload somebody's DNA from 23andMe, they will use it. And this, for me, this is an older version. This is like, I don't remember what the chip is, 3 or something like that of 23andMe, but you get a more complete report. Whereas if you use the more later ones, you may have some missing, right? Heart rate. This is somebody who's likely to have a higher heart rate. And you can look at why. Heart health overall, you know, and again, looking at normal risk versus lower risk or average risk. Average risk isn't so good for heart disease or for any of these things because we have a sick population. And you can see all these SNPs that are associated. A hardening of the arteries, right? What are some of the SNPs associated there? Varicose veins. What else do they have? Hemorrhoids. And there's a lot of references. So this allows you to really go deep with this stuff. You don't have to for your initial report with people. And for some people, you'll never do it, but people are really interested in this stuff. So you may want to provide this kind of support for them. You know, heart rate there, heart rate variability, right? It's really thorough. Blood pressure. What else do we have? Salt sensitivity. Some people need to avoid salts to keep their blood pressure under control, other people not. In this particular sample, most of the markers are average, but some of them are not. Here's ApoB is likely to be lower. Yay, here's something that's positive in here. TMAO, which has to do with processing of choline in the gut. And in this particular person, probably not a good idea to eat eggs and other and animal products that are high in choline. Homocysteine, average. LDL cholesterol, average, right? LDL particle size, more likely to have those smaller, dense, you know, so it's cardiac risk. And when you look at all of these things together, you want to look at the advanced lipid panel to see if this person actually has smaller and denser. What is the pattern? HDL cholesterol. So some of these lipoprotein A, right? This is the LPA gene, right? This is AT, actually a couple of homozygous. And so not so good here, right? And so this is something you want to keep an eye on and make sure you're testing the LPA and make sure that this person's on an overall heart healthy lifestyle. Triglycerides are likely to be higher. Total cholesterol, average. High cholesterol, increased likelihood, right? So this is some good things that you can learn from here. Again, you're not going to learn this all in one day. You're going to learn it by going through it. I don't know all these SNPs. If I'm wanting to go deeper with somebody who has the cardiac risk, I'm going to run this report for them and I'm going to go through and kind of help figure out where their risks are and use it for, you know, for determining how well they're going to comply with your recommendations. And when they see a lot of the risk and they know that mom and dad died of heart attacks, they're going to be much more compliant with what you're recommending that they do. Okay. So I showed you the genetic life hacks, showed you the self-decode report, and I'm just going to close with what are some of the things that you want to do with people who have cardiovascular related SNPs? Well, of course, you want to test, right? You want to test their cardiovascular system to see where it's at. You want to make sure they have good foundational diet and lifestyle habits. Everybody needs to start there. A lot of people ask, well, what herb should I take for this? And what supplement should I take for this? No, you've got to get your foundations under control. Run an advanced lipid panel. Avoid oxidized fats and excess saturated fats. Have regular cardiovascular exercise. And that doesn't mean train for a marathon because that could be too much. Right? It could be 15 minutes of walking every day or twice a day. I mean, 4 times a week, whatever. Stress management techniques, right? Being in parasympathetic increases your risk of avoiding heart problems. Being in sympathetic increases your risk. So, and then customize supplementation as they need it. Not everybody needs high dose omega-3 fats, but some people need between 2 and 3 grams of omega-3s every day. Magnesium, super important, especially with blood pressure SNPs and blood sugar SNPs. And magnesium, you can easily tell if they have magnesium deficiency just by asking them what they eat, but also by symptoms, you know, a lot of leg cramps or muscle cramps, things like that. CoQ10, especially if they're on statins or if they have an LP elevated, LPA, the niacin, super important for LDL and for LPA. And hawthorn berry is a really good tonifier for the heart, helps with blood pressure, and it's also a liver detoxifier. So all of these things are things you can incorporate with people, but you don't just do it willy-nilly. You don't just create a, here's your cardiovascular protocol and give them everything to do. You work with them on what are the main things. And generally speaking, I find if you give them three things at a time, get them to do those things. And then the next time you see them, you give them three more things. And some people, it's only one or two, because if you give them too much, they're not going to do any of it. We want our people healthy. So when you're doing your evaluation, your blood chem and your genes assessment, and you're working to get them into your program, what you want to do is point out the most important things. What are the most important things from their history? How does that relate to their family history? How does that relate to their symptoms? What are the most important things from their blood chemistry? And how does that relate to their symptoms and their goals and what they most want in their history? And then the same thing with the genes. And how do they all tie together? And paint them a picture of how it all ties together. Avoiding cardiac risk is a critical thing. There, you know, autoimmune disease is pretty darn bad. It can be very life-threatening over time. But cardiovascular, it can cause somebody to, out of the blue, just die. I mean, seriously, this is what happened to my own parents. And I know it's not a pleasant thing to be in. So helping people to see that they need to make changes, the cardiovascular system is a really critical one to be working on. So we'll see you on the next video.